This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Cottaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport. It's a very special Halloween edition of the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic podcast produced by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Marcus Vanderberg and the guy that always dresses up for Halloween in blackface, Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham. What's going on, fellas?
Hey, Arnold!
What's up, Nate?
I'm just going to stop asking that question every week.
You know what's going on. No. We're your co-hosts. You're supposed to know.
No. But
like I mentioned, this is a very special Halloween-themed edition of the show. And before we get into the many great sports topics that we're going to touch on this week. We got the World Series to talk about, Calvin Johnson going ham. We have a couple great lists to touch on today, as well as plenty of news and insights in the world of wrestling with the Ringside Wrap. But before we get into that, like I mentioned, man, Halloween is coming up. By the time you listen to this, it may be past, depending on how late you were downloading the show. But are you a big Halloween guy, Marcus?
Not really. I'm not big on dressing up, so, you know, Halloween really doesn't do anything for me. Halloween, the older I got, Halloween used to mean the start of the NBA season, so I'm excited about Tuesday night with the NBA kicking off, so I'm more excited about watching hoops on Thursday night as opposed to trick-or-treating or going out dressing up.
Yeah, and I am looking forward to the NBA season kicking off as well. We got a great interview with Mark Spears from Yahoo Sports talking NBA a little bit later on in the show. But Big Nasty, judging by the picture that I'm sure everyone has seen by now, we know you love dressing up. So were you big into Halloween as a young Alfred Cunningham?
You know, I was. I did like trick-or-treating, but I think I like Halloween more as I grew up and got into party mode. You know, I don't party as much as I used to. Yeah, I love going out and hanging out with friends, but Halloween is one of those special holidays to me that gives us an excuse to go out, have some drinks, dress up in funny, creative costumes, and see women dress up in their skimpy little costumes that they always use when it comes to Halloween. So, yes, I love Halloween.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of Halloween would probably be the revealing outfits that a lot of these young ladies is wearing, and these scandalous skeezers, skip scop scallywags, hee haws, heppers, and hooly hoos. And I had a crazy story the other night. I went out to 7-Eleven, to purchase some adult beverages for the evening, and there was a young lady dressed in a police officer's uniform, which I'm pretty sure wasn't regulation. And she tried to arrest me. And at first, I was a little bit offended, you know, because we're still in a post-Trayvon Martin world. Racial profiling is still real, people. So I was a little bit offended, but I was also a little bit flattered because she didn't look half bad. But nothing progressed because her boyfriend, who was dressed up as a convict, he kind of looked like Nails, the old wrestler from the WWF. He was pretty close to her because I think he knew the Wolfpack was going to be out that night. But kind of makes me laugh that and I know Alfred probably has more experience with this than Marcus or myself. Marcus is happily booed up and I'm, you know, out of a relationship recently. So Alfred, you know, being the single man that he is, I'm sure he gets to enjoy the talent, let's just say, more so than the other two kings, if you will.
I do okay in that department. Let's just leave it at that.
Oh, and getting into the world of sports, something that is not okay, something that you could say is kind of downright weird, downright spooky, if you will, has been the first four games of the World Series as it stands today. We're recording this on Monday. The series is tied up 2-2, but Marcus, I know you're a big baseball guy. This has been one of the weirdest and wildest and wackiest series I've ever seen in terms of the way some of these games have ended.
It's been very weird, and it's going to lead to some hurt feelings at the end of this series because one team is going to feel a bit slighted, a bit cheated on the way Game 3 ended with that interference play involving Will Middlebrooks and Alan Craig at third base. So we've had back-to-back games now where we've had first in the World Series, first with the obstruction call in Game 3, and last night's Game 4 ending on a pickoff, which is a first in the World Series. So this has been an entertaining series. I saw the ratings for last night, and it did 16 million people, so people are actually tuning in to watch the World Series, which is good for the sport. So I'm just curious to see how it shakes out. I feel this is going now seven games. And, I mean, at this point, I really can't tell you. I'm sticking by my prediction for the Red Sox, but it wouldn't surprise me either way who won the series.
Yeah, and you think about how old baseball is, how long it's been around, and we have back-to-back games where we see first-time endings, so it's already a memorable World Series. And on top of that, it's been a very good and very competitive World Series with back-and-forth games when one team will take a big lead and the other team will come back. I've really enjoyed this, I think, more than any World Series I've watched in the past maybe 5 to 10 years. So that is good for the sport of baseball. And as far as Colton Wong getting picked off, it's just good this happened in early in the season. It wasn't on an elimination game, and it didn't give the Cardinals a chance to win the World Series, and he completely screwed it up. So it's not his Bill Buckner moment, but I feel bad, and now I want the Cardinals to win even more so that he doesn't become a goat of sorts.
And the thing to me, which is crazy, you know, and I'm already going on record saying that Game 5 in St. Louis will end on a balk or something crazy like that. Just that's the way the series has been going. But I still think it's up for grabs. I think that you know, it's the cliche, but whoever wins Game 5, I think they'll be in that catbird seat. I don't see the Cardinals coming back 3-2, heading back to Boston, or coming back from 2-3 down, heading into Boston. And I really have a hard time seeing the Red Sox, if they go back home down 2-3, I don't know if they can, win two games back-to-back. So I'm still sticking with my prediction of the Cardinals. I guess now I have to pick the Cardinals in 7. I'm not shying away from St. Louis. I still think that they'll pull it out. Marcus, you sticking with the Red Sox?
I am.
And Big Nasty, even though you are a habitual flip-flopper, I think you're sticking with the Cards too, correct?
Not true. I don't know what Big Nasty you're talking about. You might be talking about Corliss Williamson, who is being sued by my firm. So, yes, Corliss Williamson, you are a flip-flopper, and Big Nasty Alfred Kunwa is not. So, yes, I'm sticking with the St. Louis Cardinals.
It must be Halloween or a full moon or something, because that's the first time Corliss Williamson has been mentioned on a national show in 15 years.
Well, then don't talk about him so much. Don't talk about that flip-flopper. He doesn't need to be on our show.
Oh, man. Somebody we are going to talk about, though, and that's somebody that did work yesterday. And Marcus hit me up on Facebook. I think it was probably around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. I had taken a nap, you know, with the last 2 minutes to go in that Dallas-Detroit game yesterday because I thought it was a foregone conclusion after the Lions went 3 and out and gave the ball back to Tony Romo and the Cowboys. I was like, okay, it's a wrap. Let me take a nap and get ready for the World Series later on the night as well as the Hell in the Cell pay-per-view. I wake up and there's like this huge conversation going on between Big Nasty and Brother Marcus, not only talking about the choking of the Cowboys and how great Calvin Johnson is, but of course, you know, Alfred had to throw his boy Marvin Lewis in there and stick up for Marvin Lewis. But this is going to be a Marvin Lewis free podcast today, as much as 2/3 of the program, 66% love Marvin Lewis. We're not going to talk about that today. But I do want to talk about Megatron. I do want to talk about Dez Bryant. And, you know, what a crazy ending to a game. And I think this just goes to reinforce the notion, and some people are already kind of putting the cart before the horse saying Calvin Johnson's the greatest receiver of all time. I don't believe that. But he is one of the best that we've ever seen, Marcus.
He is. And he's on my fantasy team, so I was very invested in this game yesterday, going against Alfred. Alfred, good game, good effort.
Did you win?
Well, I'm up by 10. Something wrong? You good? You tired?
I'm just yawning. I'm sorry.
You tired of losing? What was that? I'm up by 10. He has Earl Thomas left. I have Jared Cook. So assuming Earl Thomas doesn't go crazy, then chalk one
this
up for the good guys.
This will be two losses in a row, won't it? For a Big Nasty?
No, he didn't lose last week, I don't think.
Okay. Yeah, who cares? But let me tell you something. Nate, let me ask you just really quick. You fell asleep when Tony Romo had the ball in the fourth quarter with the lead. In what world do you live in that you think Tony Romo with the ball in the fourth quarter makes the Cowboys safe for victory? I want to live in that world because it's obviously not true.
You got a minute left on the clock. How hard is it to run out the clock? I played against the computer in Madden, and we know how bad the computer cheats, and even then I can't get the ball back in a minute.
I once saw a game that was a playoff game with the Cowboys in Seattle where it looked like they were going to just tie that game up. And Tony Romo couldn't even handle the snap. Look, I love Tony Romo. I will defend him. But Tony Romo, the numbers don't lie, and my eyes don't lie. He's bad late games. Now, this was not his fault, but I'm just saying, you know, the Cowboys tend to do this late.
I mean, Tony Romo can't play defense. I mean, you can't allow Matthew Stafford and that Detroit offense to march down the field with a minute left in the game and go, what was it, 80 yards, Marcus, to score the winning touchdown?
Yeah, they went the complete 80. And, yeah, it was – if you missed this game yesterday, go back and watch the entire fourth quarter from yesterday's game. I think there was 55 points combined between the two teams in the fourth. So it was an exciting game, and it's capped off by Matthew Stafford using a bit of a heady play. He was lined up on the 1 yard line with no timeouts left, and it looked like the Lions were going for a spike, and Stafford leaped up and got the ball across the goal line for the game winning touchdown.
And I think maybe even more noteworthy, or at least that's the conversation coming out of this game, than the greatness of Calvin Johnson is the behavior of one Dez Bryant. And, you know, being a part of a team here at the Kings of Sport, you know, I know that sometimes, you know, you guys don't hear it off air, but, you know, there's times when one member of the team, I'm not going to point any fingers, but, you know, y'all know who he is. You know, he will get a little animated and he'll want more speaking time. And you know, Marcus and I have to call him this unnamed individual down. And so I can see where Tony Romo and the Cowboys, you know, they got a talented player, but Dez Bryant, you know, I can't blame him for being passionate about the game, but I can blame him for being unprofessional. So what were your thoughts on that, Brother Alfred?
Sounds like a great, charismatic guy. I want to have a beer with him one day. But listen, this whole Dez Bryant meltdown, it speaks to a greater story. Okay, let's get mad at him. He's a wide receiver. I know Michael Jordan used to punch his teammates, but we love that. He's competitive. But let's get mad at Dez Bryant. Okay, you can have that.
Hold
but
on, wait. Before you go on, Jordan punched his teammates out in private. He didn't do it on the sidelines during a game. Continue.
But guess what? The Cowboys organization is an absolute mess. There is no leadership in place for that Cowboys organization to go to somewhere and say, yes, we've been here before. We're in crisis. We can overcome this. You got Monty Kiffin as your defensive coordinator, right? But he's sitting up in a skybox while Rod Marinelli is shown yelling at his players. Jason Garrett, he's your head coach, right? But Bill Callahan is calling the plays. They wouldn't even let him call the plays. Tony Romo is your field general, right? Your quarterback. But guess what? He makes mistakes late, and he's been known to choke in the big moment. So there's nothing to fall back on in times of crisis. There's no consistent leadership. The coaching staff is lined with high-profile defensive coordinators and former head coaches who all have big egos, who've been in Super Bowls, and they think they know better. The only person who can stand up and say, hey, you do what I say, is Jerry Jones, and he doesn't know shit about football, so the Cowboys are a mess. So whenever they get crisis, when Dez Bryant is not getting the ball, he's not going to trust any type of game plan or game flow or consistent leadership or, oh, we've been here before. No, he's going to freak out because he doesn't think he's going to get the ball. He probably legitimately thought they forgot he was in the game plan, and with all those egos in the Cowboys locker room and on the coaching staff, who can blame him? Is that too much for you to ingest?
No, it's not. It's not. I'm just taking it all in. So you're on.
As far as Michael Jordan's, real quick on Michael Jordan, I know he did it in private. Isn't that a little bit worse? That he's not.
In what world is punching your teammate in public worse than punching your teammate in private?
What I'm saying is that the court of public opinion is now indicting Des Bryant for basically wearing his heart on his sleeve. And, you know, we don't know what he was saying. He was showing a little bit of passion. But with Michael Jordan, why can't he show passion in public instead of, doesn't that speak to his character that he is going to get physical like that when nobody's looking? Isn't that a little bit worse than wearing your heart on the sleeve and getting mad when the team isn't following a game plan that obviously worked when they threw the ball to him three times and he caught two touchdowns?
No, because Michael Jordan was a professional, and there's something called keeping things in-house. And let's go back to the analogy that we had a problem on the show. If I send you an email, Alfred, or if I give you a phone call or say, hey, you know, we got to get this right, we got to straighten this out, that's one thing. You know, we can holler and scream and yell all we want. But if I come on the show and say, Big Nasty, you ain't pulling your weight, Big Nasty, you ain't shit, get together. That's disrespectful, and that's unprofessional. And that's what Des Bryant did by showing up Tony Romo. And it wasn't even Tony Romo's fault that the Cowboys lost that game yesterday. Tony Romo can't play defense. But by showing up Tony Romo and DeMarcus Ware, who wasn't even dressed, had to have to be the voice of reason in that dysfunctional sideline, you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, you're right in the sense that they don't have leadership. But I also think that you can't give Des Bryant a pass on this.
I'm not at all. Not get it twisted. I'm not saying what he did is right. I'm saying what I took out of it is that Cowboys organization does not have the leadership required for somebody to be calm in that situation. Somebody of Des Bryant's nature who really, let's face it, he had red flags coming out of college. So I'm just saying, when I see this from whoever, when I see yelling on the sidelines, it's just indicative of how much of a mess the Cowboys is. It fits.
I will say, earlier this season, we had Tom Brady yelling on the sidelines at his receivers. And yes, he was criticized as well. So it's not just a wide receiver thing or a Des Bryant thing. It's just a perception thing. You know, you have the media, the fans who are observing all this go down. And usually it's a one-sided view because we don't know exactly what's being discussed. We're just seeing, you know, the visual. We're not hearing the audio. You know, for it to happen one time during the game, that's fine. For it to happen a second time when it did, it just screamed to me that there's a bigger issue there. And whether it's the Cowboys organization or Jason Jarrett or Des Bryant, whatever it is, it needs to be handled because the Cowboys aren't going to go very far in the playoffs or even make the playoffs if their best player is acting the way he is on the sidelines. That's all I'm saying.
And the first outburst that he had, what makes it so bad is that they were winning at the time. Like I can even, you know, give you a little bit of leeway if you're losing and things aren't working right, but the offense was clicking, they had the lead, and he's upset because he put all this pressure on himself in the week leading up to the game by saying he was better than Calvin Johnson, and now he's not getting a chance to show that, but they're still winning. So it's like, you know, what do you want? Do you want to be a star, or do you want to be a winner?
Well, did they win?
They did not win.
Did they win? Okay, and Terrence Williams got more targets than Des Bryant, and Des Bryant got 3 catches. Would they have won if maybe Des Bryant got 10 targets? Because I'll tell you what, he turned 2/3 of his targets into touchdowns, and Terrence Williams was dropping 2/3 of his targets. So maybe he has a point.
Boy, Calvin Johnson's great, isn't he, Nate?
As the great Jim Ross once said, Brother Alfred, if wishes were fishes, the world would be an ocean.
No, I completely agree with that. We can't go back and rewrite history, but the numbers say that Des Bryant was underutilized and he overperformed based on what he was given. So for him to want the ball more, and you saw that man make that, say what you want to say about Calvin, who was phenomenal and deserves every bit of praise he got. But Des Bryant made what I think is the greatest catch I have ever seen, given the circumstances, in double coverage with the ball behind him, able to adjust his body in midair like a contortionist and bring it down. I mean, you cannot coach that type of athleticism.
So you're saying Dez Bryant is better than Calvin Johnson? Is that?
I'm not saying that at all. I'm not getting caught up in this media hype for one game in the 2013 season. Midway will decide who the greatest wide receiver of all time. I'm all about body of work. But I'm just saying that was a phenomenal catch. And maybe if they're thinking that, okay, Dez Bryant is covered, that's not why we're not going to him. Hello? He's catching balls in double traffic like that and being double teamed. Maybe he will catch those balls if you throw it to him more.
That is true. But, you also remember this is Tony Romo. So you're taking the risk of hurting your already fragile quarterback when it comes to making those plays and to putting them in situations where he's probably going to, if he doesn't complete that pass, he's probably throwing a pick. So he had no interceptions yesterday, which was good. But you mentioned the targets. Dez Bryant only had 6 targets. I don't know if that's part.
Scared money doesn't make money. Are you saying that Tony Romo needs to play conservative like he's Alex Smith? They paid him $100 million in the offseason. You better be making those throws.
You play to win the game, and you win the game more times than not in the NFL by not turning the ball over. So I can't blame Tony Romo for hitting Jason Witten or any of the other receivers if they're open versus throwing to a double or a triple cover Dez Bryant. That just makes sense.
But Dez Bryant's athleticism doesn't make sense. Neither does Calvin Johnson. Look at some of the throws these guys get. They're able to make those plays. That's why you pay them the big dollars and go out and draft them as high as they did. You mean to tell me that you wouldn't – okay, based on what you saw yesterday between Terrence Williams and Dez Bryant, wouldn't you be more inclined to say, okay, I would rather have Dez Bryant in a tough situation where he's covered than Terrence Williams wide open where he was dropping balls?
Well, no shit. But I'm talking about, look, Stafford had 2 picks yesterday, but Stafford is sort of used to, Stafford did have 4 picks and still bounce back. Romo, we've seen Romo in the fourth quarter late just melt under the pressure. So
we've also seen him throw 5 interceptions against the Buffalo Bills and come back and win that game. So there is a template for him to fail and come back to succeed.
Against the Buffalo Bills.
You don't pay this guy. You don't pay this guy the money that you do. You do not anoint him as your franchise star and field general if you don't trust him to make certain throws. It's ridiculous. You're treating him like he's Joe Flacco or somebody who just makes the safe throws, manage the game. You've got veterans on the team. No, you're one of those veterans. You get out there and you make those tough throws.
Okay, so and you're, for the record, you're saying the Lions defense and or the lack of running game for Dallas had nothing to do with this. Because it's a lot easier to defend Dez Bryant when you know there's no running game to deal with. So if you double coverage Dez Bryant, then what are you left with? Terrence Williams.
Is he being double covered by Champ Bailey and Deion Sanders, or is he being covered by Lions? I mean, who is he being
He's
covered
by? He's being covered by professional football players.
Okay, because I'm sorry. I saw him make
some – The defense gets checks too.
They absolutely do. And I'm not trying to take money off anybody's food or anybody's table, but I'm saying that Dez Bryant wins in most situations if you put that ball up in the air. It's not even about making a tough throw. Just make the throw to Dez Bryant. He can make plays.
I would agree with you if this were the 90s and people were in love with the gunslingers, and this was the heyday of Brett Favre and cats like that. But this is a new NFL. This is the spread-out NFL, the passing-heavy NFL, the QBR era, if you will, where efficiency matters. It's a reason why people are saying Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback ever because he doesn't make mistakes. Now, I'd take Joe Montana or people are like that over Tom Brady, but Tom Brady is so efficient, that's the template, that's the model. Game managers, you talk about Joe Flacco, he's got a ring. You talk about Alex Smith, his team is 8-0. That may be a fraud, that may be smoke and mirrors, but his team is 8-0.
It's not.
So, to have people say on the one hand, Tony Romo makes too many mistakes, he needs to be more consistent and more efficient with the ball, and then also say, just throw it up to Dez. You can't have it both ways.
Any other thing between Dez Bryant and Calvin Johnson, there's 3 inches and some pounds between the two of them. So, yeah, Calvin Johnson, you can throw it up there. We're talking about a big size difference here between the two of the receivers.
Okay, but, I mean, that didn't affect his first touchdown catch, did it?
Who, Dez Bryant?
Yeah.
And he had to make a hell of a catch to catch the ball. So, I mean, you can't expect him to do that each time when he's didn't throw balls in double coverage. That's my point.
Okay, no, and I understand he's going to be double covered, but you have to find a way to get this guy to the buzzers. No, Calvin Johnson is triple covered, and I know there is a size difference. You're absolutely right, but they are very, very similar as to the type of receiver. They are big, strong, physical guys who can make plays. Both Dez Bryant's touchdowns, I don't even feel like Tony Romo should have gotten credit for them because he made those plays happen. He has the ability to take over games, and if we are trying to reason in any way that there needs to be a level of efficiency with a team with this type of payroll and this amount of talent. That is laughable. We're not talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, who, as good as they are, don't have a dynamic quarterback or really any wide receivers who can separate themselves consistently. We're talking about the Dallas Cowboys, who have so much talent but don't know what to do with it.
Well, they've got talent on the payroll. They got talent on the books, but not on the playing field. You talk about Miles Austin out. You talk about no running game. Marcus mentioned it earlier. As somebody that owns DeMarco Murray in fantasy football, I feel for Tony Romo and them boys with the lack of the running game that they have. You talk about a lackluster defense. You know, Monty Kiffin or whoever is in charge of that defense, they have not shown up all season. So, you know, to say that they've got all this talent, I do think there's talent there, but they're either injured or being mismanaged or miscoached or whatever. But
that's exactly what it is, because you saw Sean Lee. He basically had Matt Stafford's number. I mean, you can't tell me that he's not part of a big talent pool for the Dallas Cowboys. And I will agree that they have had injury concerns, but that is a deep team, and it's a team that really – it's underachieving again. We always talk about the Cowboys as underachieving.
I'll tell you one thing, one last thing that Calvin Johnson has over Dez Bryant. When we've seen Dez Bryant have some off-the-field issues, Calvin Johnson got Diddy to handle all that.
He's got – what, Johnson? Is Diddy Calvin or Johnson?
you worry about that, Calvin. That Johnson, take care of this. Take that.
one last thing. In terms of targets for the season, Calvin Johnson has 78 targets. Dez Bryant has 77. So, I mean, he's getting the ball a lot. I mean, he's not.
And he got targeted. I think he got targeted like 15 times last week.
Calvin had 16 targets for 14 catches, and Dez Bryant had 6 targets for, I think, 3 catches. Yeah, 3.
Yeah, and it's not like Tony's not looking for him. Like I said, he targeted him 15 times the previous game. It's like you play according to the game plan. And if Detroit has schemed it in such a way that, hey, they got ears too. They heard all the stuff that Dez was talking earlier in the week. They're like, oh, you better than I do? Well, we're gonna see how you fare against this defense. So I think it was both Dez, I think, might have put too much pressure on himself. But also Detroit has something to prove when it came to who had the better receiver.
And that's a great point, and you bring it about because they're emotional edges. There's a big factor that in football. But I will note that Kansas City, arguably the best defense in the NFL, Calvin went off for 9 receptions and 141 yards and a touchdown. So the guy's basically matchup proof.
That's why I drafted him first round, baby. for my 3-5 squad.
I'm telling you, we have the... Somebody sent me some trade offers this week, and it's like I can't trade away my best players, because even at – I think after this week I'm going to be like 2-6. Even at 2-6, I still have a shot in our weak division. Yeah, like nobody in our division is out of it, Marcus. We're the NFC East of fantasy football.
We are.
I hope you're proud.
And Alfred's off in the AFC West out there.
Hey, he said he was to be the man. You got to beat the man. He's talking all that good stuff in the preseason. So you put your money where your mouth is. Oh man! But speaking of money, coming up next, as this Halloween edition of the Kings of Sport rolls on, we have a great interview with Mark Spears from Yahoo Sports talking NBA as the season prepares to kick off, and we'll see. Will the Heat three-peat, or will somebody else show up and take the crown this year? So we got Mark Spears coming up. We got the Ringside Rap. We got segment 4. A lot of great stuff left on this program. Stick and stay. Kings of Sports, be back right after this. You start to freeze.
Welcome back to the podcast that's causing a panic all around the planet. From Boston to Boise, in Fargo to Fresno, Orlando to Ontario, and all points in between. You're listening to the Kings of Sport on the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. I'm flying solo for our interview this week with someone I'm glad to call a mentor and colleague, NBA writer Mark Spears of Yahoo Sports. Mark, welcome to the show.
What's up, bro?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Man, just excited about this season. Interesting first day. I kind of wish I was in Miami to see Derrick Rose's first game against the Heat. That's probably, to me, the first... I mean, the most exciting first game of the season. But, hey, Lakers-Clippers is no slouch either, with or without Kobe. So I'm excited about that game tonight, too.
You mentioned the Bulls game. Derrick Rose was the story of the preseason and how well he looked after sitting out all of last year. Does a healthy Derrick Rose make Chicago a legit threat to compete with Miami in the East?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, Derrick Rose is going to be better than he was before. He has a running jumper with, you know, runner with both hands. He has a nice, you know, jump shot, better jump shot than before. He actually is jumping higher. The Bulls are certainly going to be a major factor in the NBA, in the Eastern Conference. You know, the one thing, and this is certainly putting the cart way before the horse, that I'm looking at, is can they figure out a way to overcome something I saw in the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago, which is, say, the Miami Heat putting LeBron on Derrick, or the Indiana Pacers putting Paul George on Derrick, putting that 6'8 length on Derrick, which is something that really smothered him, made it tough for him, and in the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago. And I'm curious or wonder if there's really even an answer for that, because that's something that the Pacers, you know, or the Heat can turn to at any time. But, you know, Thibodeau is a great coach, very creative, and, you know, we'll see how they counter that down the line. But right now, I expect the Bulls to get a lot of wins, and Derrick Rose being the main reason why.
You mentioned Indiana Pacers. I know that's a team that you're high on. So high that you actually have them winning the NBA title.
Hey, you know what, man? I'm not a conventional guy. It's easy to take the Heat, isn't it?
It's very easy.
And so the one way I looked at it, or the way I looked at it, is, you know, people forget that the Pacers – we're actually a game away from going to the NBA Finals. And their team is better than before. Paul George is going to be better. Danny Granger, yeah, he's going to be out a couple weeks, but that's a precautionary thing. He'll be back. He'll be a big addition to the Pacers after missing last season. And the addition of Lewis Scola to me is huge. He could start for a lot of NBA teams. So I think that combination of those guys, you know, plus the fact that it's just so hard to get back to the finals year after year after year. There hasn't been a team that has made the finals four straight years since the Boston Celtics in 1984. You know, so now for Miami to do it, yeah, they could do it. You know, certainly they have the talent to do it. I'm just going to go against the grain. And, you know, I'm going to go with the Pacers. For some reason, I feel like this is going to be a great season for them.
That is definitely a pit that's against the grain, and we'll see how it plays out during the season. Kobe Bryant is still out, and this is the game you're covering tonight here in Los Angeles following his Achilles tendon injury. When do you expect him back in action, and do you expect the Lakers to be a playoff team this season?
You know, that's a great question. It's all on Kobe, man. It's all on when he comes back. And then not only when does he come back, how many minutes is he going to play? That's a hard injury to come back from. And if you're only getting Kobe 20 to 25 minutes a game, that's certainly going to be tough. But I think the key right now, you know, Paul Gasol is going to have to get him there. He's going to have to, you know, be the guy that kind of, you know, he has to go back to having an all-star type season and keeping his team afloat and getting wins and just keeping them in reach of that seventh and eighth spot. And then, you know, hopefully when Kobe does come back, which I expect him to before the year's up, he could give him some great minutes to, you know, get him over the hump. So, no, I'll say they will. They're going to sneak in like they did before, but I have a hunch that they'll figure out a way to get in.
How long will it take for Laker fans to turn on Nick Young?
You know what? I don't know that they'll turn on him because I don't know that they expect much. He's just a guy just putting the Band-Aid on a big cut. And I don't know if it's fair to put all the pressure on Nick. I mean, he can score now. He's certainly one of those guys where one play you're like, oh, no. The next play you're like, oh, my goodness. You know, he's an OMG LOL player.
A.K.A. Swaggy P.
Exactly. And you want him to do well because you want to see how he dresses after the game.
There you go.
In the press conference interviews. But, they got a series of guys like him and Shawnee Williams and Xavier Henry, just kind of guys that kind of just help hold the fort down. With Kobe out, I don't know if that's really realistic to ask them to do, but I just think Lakers fans are just hoping to keep their head above water until Kobe comes back.
The other team in town, the Los Angeles Clippers, added Doc Rivers in the offseason, and he's already sent a message to the Lakers by covering up the banners during Clipper games. Is this the season we finally see? I sound like Clipper Darryl here. Is this the season that we finally see the Clippers become the main attraction in town?
Oh, they will be. They will be. I would not be surprised if they, you know, make it to the NBA Finals. You know, Doc Rivers is a great, great coach. And, you know, I covered the Celtics when he got them to the finals that one year when Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett came in and got him to gel really quickly, you know. And I expect him to bring Chris Paul, who's having already a phenomenal career, to even newer heights, you know, to challenge Chris Paul to be even better. You know, I expect him to get the most out of Blake Griffin. You'll probably see him facing the basket more, using his athleticism against the slower power forwards and convincing DeAndre Jordan that he needs to try to be a defensive force, defensive player of the year kind of guy, and not worry so much about the alley-oop. So the one thing about them that nobody's really talking about is they're going to be a very scary, you know, three-point shooting team. Probably one of the best in NBA history with Chris Paul, J.J. Redick, Jared Dudley, Jamal Crawford, Collison can shoot the three a little bit. I really think that they're going to be a devastating team from deep and be able to get the advantage on a lot of teams because their shooting is going to be so great. And they have so much talent shooting-wise that it's like, who do you double or can you even double? And I expect a lot of them guys to get open three-pointers to aid what the Clippers are trying to do.
The big free agent signing in the offseason was Dwight Howard going to Houston. What exactly do you expect from the Rockets this season? And is it fair for Rockets fans to expect the title right away?
They shouldn't. do they have the talent to get there? Yes, but I do think one major weakness is the point guard position there. They got to get stronger there, maybe by trade or something. I do think that could be a problem. I wonder if, how well Harden and Howard are going to coexist. I know that they were great together in the preseason, but as John Lucas used to say, it's a little difference when the lights come on, Hoss. And I'm curious to see how those guys play together when the lights are on. And, you know, James ain't scared to shoot. And we'll see, you know, how Dwight adapts to a lot of that. So I'm really, really intrigued by them and curious to see how their season is. But I do like the Clippers and Golden State and San Antonio and Oklahoma City with a healthy Russell Westbrook better.
In terms of the rookie class, who are a couple players NBA fans should look at while flipping through the lead pass this season?
One guy that's probably kind of off the beaten path a little bit that I like is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, maybe the best rookie name. Detroit Pistons rookie from Georgia. Really, really smooth shooting guard, man. I think he'll fit in well and, with the young talent in Detroit, and he and Brandon Jennings probably will do some great things together. The name that everybody's throwing out is Victor Oladipo from the Orlando Magic. He's probably the consensus favorite to be rookie of the year. And then another guy I like is Cody Zeller with the Charlotte Bobcats. You know, the fans there booed him when he was drafted by the Bobcats, walked out of their draft party. But I think he'll make them eat crow, get the last laugh, and have a very successful career in Charlotte, and give Michael Jordan his first, successful draft pick.
We'll get you out here on this question. What do you think would be more intriguing, the 2013-14 NBA regular season or the 2014 NBA draft and free agency period?
I think they're all going to be very interesting, man. There's so many storylines this season. Every team seems to have something. You know, as far as the draft's concerned, I know everybody's been talking about Wiggins, but I like Jabari Parker a lot at Duke. You know, let's see this thing play out. He could end up being the number one pick. There's also a kid at Kentucky's got a bunch of kids to keep an eye on, too. Yes, Wiggins right now is the guy, but, you know, there's some guys that can end up challenging him for that top spot. As far as free agency goes, it's going to be a madhouse. Which LeBron and Melo and Kobe and Powell and, yeah, I don't even want to think about that right now.
Got a long way to go, but thanks again for stopping by the show, and good luck to this NBA season. Hope they have you on soon.
All right, brother, man. Always good to talk to you.
More Kings of Sport right after this.
This year, Halloween fell on a weekend. Me and Ghetto Boys are trick-or-treating, robbing little kids for bags, till an old man got behind our rags. So we speeded up the pace, took a look back, and he was right before our face. We were in for a squabble, no doubt, so I swung and tried to take him out. He was going down, we planned, but this wasn't no ordinary man. He stood about 6 or 7 feet, now that's the creep I be seeing in my sleep. So we triple teamed on him, dropping them fifth ward bees on him. The more I swung, the more blood flew. Then he disappeared, and my boys disappeared too. Then I felt just like a fiend. It wasn't even close to Halloween. It was dark as death on the streets. My hands were all bloody from punching on the concrete. Aw, man, homie. My mind is playing tricks on me.
And now it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
And welcome back to the Kings of Sport podcast, Alfred.
Big Nasty Pinnable, alongside my backup dancers, Marcus Vandenberg and Nate Milton. As all of you know, I will be headed on a 16-hour plane ride back to the motherland, Liberia, Africa, less than 2 months. And do you have any idea what I'm going to be doing on that plane for 16 hours?
I don't want to know. Nate, I don't want to know.
No meteor shower jokes. We don't want any meteor shower jokes this week. I will be listening to audiobooks with help from Audible.com. Audible.com is a premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre. Thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. And for you, the listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast, Audible is offering a free, let me say it again, free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Personally recommend an audiobook on your choice. Available at audible.com. A list of suggested bestsellers is below. And let your audience know that to get your pick. Come on, how's that gonna sell, you sons of bitches? You know I was about to kill that. You jumped me.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh man. You Marcus, have you ever seen Black Dynamite? We'll let Alfred finish his promo here in a second. But have you ever seen Black Dynamite?
No, I haven't.
One of the great jokes in Black Dynamite is that they've got these actors that read the stage directions when they're doing their scenes. So Black Dynamite barges into the room and the guy jumps up and he's like, startled, the militant jumps out of his chair, turns to Black Dynamite, what are you doing here? And it's like that right there was a big nasty moment. I mean, I'm sitting there. I know Marcus had the same thought. I'm like, I don't think he's supposed to be reading this particular part of the promo.
Wait, I was not supposed to be reading personally recommended an audiobook?
No. That's talking to you.
It's funny because we called this before ahead of time. We said there's no way he can get this right. So,
but since we are here, Alfred, why don't you personally recommend an audiobook of your choice that is available on audible.com for the listeners?
The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, The Witness by Nora Roberts, and of course, my personal favorite, Wrestling with the Devil by Lex Luger.
That is a brand new audiobook that was just released about a month or so ago, and it's the true story of a world champion wrestler, his reign, ruin, and redemption by Lex Luger, narrated by Johnny Heller. So I'm actually interested in that book. So maybe you can get it, Alfred, and tell me how it was on your trip back from Africa.
Are the sponsors going to like that we kept the take where I screwed up? I don't think that's going to be reflected very well on our brand.
I think they're listening, trust me.
Yeah, they might not. First of all, they're probably not listening, but second of all, I think Audible would get a kick out of that brilliant read that you just did right there, Big Alfred.
It kept you engaged, it took you on a ride, it took your hand, and that's why I'm Big Nasty.
You're the best in the business for a reason.
And that is obvious, but the best in the business in professional wrestling would be WWE. And while it did take me maybe one, or would have taken me two takes to knock that out, it took WWE three pay-per-views to finally deliver and give us a finish that didn't have us wanting our money back. And WWE Hell in a Cell was held this past weekend. Brother Nate, Brother Marcus, I'll start with you, Nate. What were your thoughts?
First of all, man, I'm just real disappointed that Vacant didn't retain the championship last night. I thought Bacon was a good champion. He was what was best for business. But in all seriousness, I thought it was a good show. It was a solid show. It was much better than Battleground. I really enjoyed the tag match. I enjoyed Punk Ryback in the Hell in a Cell. The main event was good too. I my problem with the main event finish is more so with the booking than the actual performances by Daniel Bryan or Randy Orton or even Shawn Michaels. I still think that it's kind of backwards booking, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's see where it goes. Orton's the champ now, so maybe they'll do something interesting here with HBK. And I think the biggest story of the night for me, it was nothing that the three of us were surprised by. I think we all called it, was Cena beating Del Rio for the World Heavyweight Championship. And I'm actually interested in SmackDown now to see what they do with that.
SmackDown.
How long Mikey's does
going
Cena
to,
have?
Mikey's going to SmackDown, by the way.
Marcus, I wanted to ask you, well, he's advertised Peter on there, so if anything, he'll just do double duty. But how long do you think he's going to hold the World Heavyweight Championship, Marcus?
I think he holds it until WrestleMania.
What?
I think this might be all be setting up for getting rid of that stupid belt finally. So I think he holds until Mania.
So you think there's going to be a unification match at WrestleMania?
I think so. If you figure WrestleMania 30, you know, you want to do something big, something new, that'd be a good way. I mean, since we're not, since they, you know, forgot about the whole brand split between the two, between Raw and SmackDown, why not get rid of the belt?
So if that scenario happens, who has the belt at Mania? Is it Brian or Orton still that Cena goes up against?
I think it,
Because in that situation, I think that Orton would still have it, so Cena could have that babyface reaction, even though people hate Cena, they like him better than Orton. And I think you'd spin Daniel Bryan off into some deal with HBK maybe at Mania.
Yeah,
I don't think you can have John Cena and Randy Orton at WrestleMania 30. I mean, that match has been done so many times, and I know maybe they can tell.
It'll be the 30th anniversary of that match.
It will be, man. I think you got to have. We're talking about John Cena has been rumored to face maybe The Undertaker. We've even heard Hulk Hogan been thrown out there. And for that to culminate in John Cena and Randy Orton, it just wouldn't feel like a big spectacle.
What about Punk?
I can see that. He's in no man's land right now. So he's. We've seen what we've needed to see with this whole Paul Heyman feud and CM Punk. Hopefully they just completely blow that thing off. It looked like it was a blow-off match last night because he finally got his revenge. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind it. But again, I would rather see John Cena get somebody that we have either rarely or never seen him in there with.
Hulk Hogan.
Well, there you go. I didn't say any names. But Hulk Hogan could be a choice if he's able to come to terms with the WWE. I'll tell you what, it'll definitely sell intrigue, and the build-up could be really good, but once you get to the building, might be a different story. On Shawn Michaels' heel turn, now, people are saying heel turn, and it looks like he did turn and go to Triple H's side, but that hasn't been confirmed yet. We're going to get an explanation. He's going to be on Raw. We film this on Monday, or we shoot this on Monday, so that's when we're going to see him tonight. Do you guys think that he's made the full-fledged turn, or is there something that WWE may try to get cute and explain his way out of this, Marcus?
No, I can't see him doing the complete turn. I mean, just if you follow the guy on Twitter, just him, you know, tweeting about God knows what, it'd be hard for me to believe him as a heel and to actually carry this out for longer than a day or two. So I think we'll get some reasoning. Whether it had to do with Bryan going after Triple H and he was thinking about Triple H as his friend or trying to teach Bryan a lesson for attacking Triple H or something, I think they'll find a way to at least put him in the gray area in terms of if he's a babyface or a heel.
Yeah, I could easily see them doing a similar deal with Big Show where, like, Triple H either used their friendship as some emotional blackmail or, you know, it wasn't that long ago where, JBL had HBK working for him because he had money problems. So I could see a similar thing, but, you know, I don't see a full-fledged heel turn for HBK, not at this stage of the game.
I think that would just be too bad because WWE has a chance creatively to go there and to keep your attention in this whole shades of gray. We just overbooked it to give you a finish. A, it's insulting to the fans' intelligence, and B, you're going to confuse viewers as to whether or not they should be cheering for Shawn Michaels. Wrestling is black and white. It's not, well, I guess I could see how I could cheer or boo this guy. No, you got to go all the way. We've seen this from Shawn Michaels. When he was a special guest referee in 1997 at SummerSlam, he accidentally hit The Undertaker with a chair, so that's accident, and he didn't want to count the three count for Bret Hart, and the fans booed him, and he turned heel. He went full heel, so it's a very situation we're seeing now, and with the return of Vince McMahon, I really do think he's going to go all the way.
Have we seen heel Shawn Michaels since he became a born-again Christian?
2005 against Hulk Hogan, they did that brief program, and he went to 1998, Shawn Michaels. He was basically shooting on Hulk Hogan. So, yeah, and it was very entertaining.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on what part of the audience you're asking. I think Hogan was a heel to a lot of the audience in 2005.
Yeah, no, I could agree with that, but in terms of the storyline, they booked Shawn Michaels to really be this arrogant snob who thought that he was being wronged, and while some people didn't agree with him, they had that great show in Canada where he completely trolled that audience, and he made it seem like Bret Hart was coming back, and everybody popped. And oh, he really didn't right. come back. So yeah, he was being a full fledged jerk.
Was that Midget Bret that night, or he just played
Naked
the music?
Bret?
No, Midget. Or was that just when he oh. hit the music and nothing came out?
Yes, he just did that. That okay. was the 97, the Midget Bret. But yeah, he just hit the music and didn't come out. So it looks interesting. But in terms of the Money in the Bank, okay, that has to be resolved and paid off somehow. Now, there were reports, if you follow the Reddit user Dolphins1925, who claims to have a source in the WWE, almost perfect picking pay-per-view matches, he did say that Damian Sandow was going to cash in the Money in the Bank briefcase. And that didn't happen. Everything else he said, he got it right, but that didn't happen. So apparently there's a change at the last minute. Do you see that happening tonight at Raw, Marcus?
I do not, no. No, I don't.
What about you, Brother Nate?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know why they didn't take an opportunity to take the briefcase off of Sandow or have him do something when, who was it, Ziggler before Del Rio?
Yes.
They had the title. I don't know why they didn't take the opportunity then, because now it seems like, you know, there is nothing that we have been shown that would lead us to believe even a weekend after a title defense, Cena would lose to Damian Sandow. And if they do kind of the cliche, oh, Cena's been injured and Sandow picks the bones and he's the new champ, I don't really think that does a lot for Sandow either.
And this is exactly the reason why we need to unify the title, because Sandow is champion. Like, is anyone really buying that? I'm not.
Mm. No, I've thought they've needed to unify the titles for a while now, and they just have the perfect formula to do so, to where you have the WWE or world champion as a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble, and they win. And after that, they're going to be asking, well, now what do we do? And from then on, you have one of those champions as the number one contender. So they could easily unify the titles. It's just a matter of having two different brands on the house shows and whether or not they want to do that for their business model, which I think long-term would make sense to unify the titles. But
entrant number 30. What you gonna do, brother? When I throw you over the ring?
Never say never.
Wearing these new J's, Doc.
One more match, brother. Oh,
please, no, no, no.
Yes, no. Yes. Now, Marcus, take him off of TNA's hands, please.
Marcus, you brought to my attention and to Brother Nate's attention that Shawn Michaels was wearing a referee shirt. He wasn't tucked in, but at the bottom you saw a patch that said VKM, the initials of Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Could this be one of those little tiny teasers for the internet to eat up that Vince McMahon might make his return on Raw tonight?
If it is, it's a great, great teaser. And I don't know how Vince plays into it, because, you know, the ultimate payoff was supposed to be Vince versus Triple H. So I don't know if this is just the start of things in terms of Vince still being on Triple H's side, but eventually working his way over. So, you know, I think we will see Vince tonight. It's about time. It's been a while. I sort of missed the guy. So, yeah, I'm ready for Vince to come back out and start to work on that bigger story with Triple H and the whole power shift.
Yeah, I don't know if it's time for Vince yet, but, I mean, with the way the ratings have been, especially going up against Monday Night Football, you know, we saw Cena come back a little earlier than usual. I could definitely see Vince being worked into the story. I don't know how much the initials on the referee jersey or shirt are a part of that, but, you know, I definitely think that Vince is not someone who's going to keep himself off of television if he thinks that not only will he add something to the story, but he'll bring eyes to the screen. So I could definitely see Vince, you know, maybe not tonight, but I definitely see things sooner rather than later.
Oh, I think tonight. Yeah, you figure World Series and Monday Night Football tonight, they need to do something to get eyeballs on Raw tonight. So I bet you it won't be just Vince. I think something else big will happen.
Red and yellow, brother.
No, not that big. to start paving the way for Survivor Series. So hopefully Raw is actually a good show tonight.
Yeah, I see a hotshot show. I'm with Brother Marcus. They've got some momentum, so we really got to capitalize on that and keep fans' attention. I see the cash-in happening. I see Vince returning for sure. But from
you see the cash-in happening?
Yes, I do see it being cashed in tonight.
And winning.
Yes, and winning. I do see Damian Sandow cashing in and winning the World Heavyweight Championship to get Cena away from that, you know, world title division.
I can see him losing, actually.
That could happen. That could happen.
I just want to cash in doing Raw. And that would be so Sandow for him to cash in and not win it.
Like, why? I don't see the point of putting the belt on Cena just to give him the L this quick.
Yeah, no, we can see. But, I mean, wins and losses, Cena's had those titles interchangeably here and there for 1 month at a time. I mean, this isn't his initial reign where he would have that belt for 1 year or so. So I really don't see him having the World Heavyweight Championship for too long. It just seems like whenever he wins those titles, they're just setting up for somebody else to take it off him because he doesn't need the title. He's John Cena. He's a walking WWE championship.
No, he doesn't need it. But I also think, you know, you don't bring this dude back, you know, a couple weeks or a month or however long early just to take the belt off him in one night, in 24 hours.
Stranger things have happened.
And if you were going to do it, why not do it last night?
Because, well, last night they already had their aspects and their pinpoints for, okay, we have Shawn Michaels, we have Hell in a Cell. You have some selling points where people are going to tune in and watch. John Cena's return in general is something that's going to jump a buy rate. Now you save the title loss for the next night on Raw, where, again, you're getting the bang for your buck twofold. To where John Cena first his return, and then the big title loss. Because otherwise, you've told the entire story. If John Cena goes and wins and loses, they go through this entire cycle.
Save it for SmackDown, brother.
One other thing. I believe this made Cena a 14-time champion now.
Woo! Getting closer!
Which means he's one more than Triple H.
And so Triple H is his opponent at WrestleMania 30.
He's two behind the legend, the Nature Boy. So, just throwing it out there. I think eventually that'll happen, and they will play that up as being a big deal.
It could happen out of the spirit of pettiness because Ric Flair is right now on the outs, reportedly, with WWE after his actions at SummerSlam. So maybe this is just Vince McMahon being a little bit petty toward Ric Flair. But from the potential future owner of TNA to the current owners of TNA, a big wrestling story broke earlier. According to Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, sorry, Dave, according to the Observer Report, the Carter family has been looking to get out of the wrestling business for a while, and there are interested buyers. He says this is 100% true no matter what you hear. So, Brother Nate, is this the beginning of the end?
You've been stacking your chests, Nate.
Yeah, I'm telling you, look, this might be the beginning of the end or the end of the beginning of whatever, but, you know, that news, I don't know if you saw The Wiz, Alfred.
The Wiz? Oh, yeah, the Michael Jackson, Diane Ross.
Yeah, but you remember, you know, when the Wicked Wiz died and all of a sudden everybody came out, can you feel a brand new day? That is the way that I'm going to look at this story because I think the best thing, you know, you can say this is the beginning of the end, but I think the best thing that would happen is a change in ownership. I don't know who that would be, whether it's Viacom, whether it's Bischoff or somebody of that nature. But I think that, you know, the Carters need to get out of the business. You know, it has been proven that this was just kind of a hobby, a thing that Bob Carter bought for, you know, his daughter to play with. And the company really has not grown under their leadership, under their stewardship. So I say, you know, I'm all for somebody coming in and buying the company, Jeff Jarrett. Currently owns 30% of the company, so I'd like to see him kept on. But you know, Dixie and Bob and Janice, you know, they can go.
Be careful what you wish for, Nate. Be careful what you wish for. It could get a lot worse.
You say dance with the devil, you know?
Yep.
I agree. This could be very good news or very bad news for TNA, depending on who buys it. And we had this conversation off air. It could be Bischoff. It could be Bischoff and Hogan, Bischoff and Hervey. Or it could be some outsider who doesn't want anything to do with wrestling like we saw with the demise of WCW. Always remember, as much as people will roll their eyes, especially TNA fans will roll their eyes at Bischoff possibly becoming the new owner of TNA, he tried to do that with WCW because he wanted to save wrestling. He wanted to put it back on TV. And say what you want to say about Bischoff, is along with being somebody who has a wrestling background, he is a TV guy, and that might be the best case scenario. So, I mean, Nate, what would your reaction be if you found out that Bischoff and Hogan are coming in to take over TNA? Would you take that if it means TNA is still in business?
See, I'm a fan of Eric Bischoff in terms of the production mind of Eric Bischoff. You know, he has made the look of Impact as a television show. He has made that better. He has experience in terms of working with outside projects. He's done a couple shows for VH1 in terms of reality shows. He's done that micro championship wrestling deal that wasn't great, but you know, he's gotten shows on other networks. So if you just give me Eric Bischoff and he's not involved with creative and he's just in terms of the production aspect of the show and maybe growing the brand out, I'm cool with that. But we all know with Bischoff, 9 times out of 10 comes Hogan. And I'm sorry, but I'm done with Hulk Hogan and TNA. We had this conversation earlier. I would go on record as to say I would rather have Jeff Jarrett and Vince Russo in charge rather than Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan. Marcus, how do you feel about that? I mean, you got to pick one, though. Which one is the lesser of two evils, Jarrett and Russo or Hogan and Bischoff?
I think Jarrett and Russo. I think Jarrett will try to balance out Russo. With Bischoff and Hogan, it's just going to be a shit show. With Russo, it'll at least be a shit show on TV, but backstage, I think Jarrett at least did a better control of terms of contracts and keeping the wrestlers happy and whatnot. But I had an idea while you were talking, Nate, about a potential buyer. What if Universal Pictures ended up buying TNA and turning TNA into pretty much a full-time attraction at Universal Studios Orlando?
So you're saying like they'd have performances or house shows, or you know, like once every hour, you get a match.
Yeah, I mean, not every hour, but I mean, if you rotated guys, it was pretty much like an attraction and a ride. So you would have, wrestling pretty much 24/7.
And then you'd have your 7 days on a Thursday.
Week. Yeah, well, I don't know about the TV element though. I don't know if they would want to broadcast anything from there, but it just made it into a. You have to go to Universal.
So you're saying essentially it would be an indie fed backed by Universal. So no TV in this scenario.
Yeah, it would just be.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think any company can survive now without TV. And then, I mean, I understand what you're saying with Universal kind of making it their own thing, and that would be interesting. But I think without TV, you don't have a company in today's wrestling. Even if you have TV, we see with Ring of Honor, even if you have TV, if you don't have the right distribution, you know, you're not relevant.
But their income is coming from the park admission itself. Listen, you're not going to get Hulk Hogan wrestling on this new Universal idea. It's going to be lower level guys, but it'll be just like, you know, for Halloween, they had like this attraction that came in. I guess they took over the soundstage down there in Universal in Orlando. It would just be a full-time thing that you had to go to the amusement park to check out. It wouldn't be any TV. If anything, it may be via like YouTube or something like that, but no Spike, nothing like that.
Well, without TV, that brand essentially dies, because that's now in the court of public opinion. If you don't have television, that's what killed WCW, is that they offered it to Eric Bischoff, but they said, but you're not going to have any TV rights. You're not putting this on TV. And he says, well, then I might as well buy it for $20, because if TNA is still interested in being somewhat relevant in the wrestling world as the distant second to WWE, they absolutely need TV.
I mean, that's an interesting idea. I think it could work to some level, but if you want to be a national promotion, I don't think you can exist without TV.
But in terms of money, if they have the best offer, you know, the Carters aren't stupid. If Universal is offering $10 million to just take this thing over and make it their own, as opposed to Bischoff offering $3 million and keeping his TV deal, you know, I think the Carters will take the money unless the Carters are smart enough to get some of their money back on the back end from this TV deal. If they can find a way to attach themselves to the Spike deal and say they get, you know, 25 cents for every dollar or whatever you make off Spike, then I could see that happening. But otherwise, if it's just a straight money grab, you know, Universal has more money than anyone.
I'd like to take your idea, Marcus, and tweak it just a little bit, because while we're talking, it kind of clicked in my head. One of the most popular TV shows of the 80s and 90s was a syndicated show that took place from Universal Studios. And it was part of the park's attraction, but it was also televised, and that was American Gladiators. Mm-hmm. You remember the beginning of every show from Universal Studios, Florida, American Gladiators. If TNA did something like that, whereas Universal owned the company and they were syndicated and they had a television presence, just not a network presence, I think that'd be a great idea. But I think you have to have at least some TV presence, and you know, whether that's being Universal cuts 2 hours worth of programming a week and they send it out to all the different affiliates, that's cool. But if you don't have any TV, I don't think, like Albert said, I don't think it's really worth it.
Yeah, and here's my concern, is that the marriage between Panda Energy and Spike TV is what has gotten TNA through tough times, where people did say, oh, they're going out of business, they're going out of business. They've always been able to survive because of that working relationship and that backing. Now that they lose Panda, I'm not sure whether or not they could survive with just Spike TV alone. It really could be a death knell if this isn't a smooth transition.
Yeah, I think
that's assuming idea though about that the Spike and Viacom would want to be involved.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. So without one of them, without possibly both of them, that's why there's so much. You know, it's kind of a gray area right now, and you don't know whether or not TNA is going to be able to survive.
What was you going to say, Marcus?
So you're saying it'd be like WCW Worldwide minus the pay-per-views. It would just be wrestling on syndication.
Like American Gladiators or what was the show back in the days? When you remember they had that roller jam that was on TNN that took place in Universal Studios? Mm-hmm. It'd be like that. It'd be a self-contained show that they could either sell to a network like Spike or they could syndicate. Universal would own it, and it would also be an attraction. Like, say, you know, we do TNA shows 5 times a week, 3 times a day, but the Saturday show is what we're going to take for TV and for syndication. I think that could be an interesting model that could work.
That's a humble model, and it's very reasonable. I think that's something that can actually
And you know, like, during the week, you're not going to have your top guys. Like, say AJ Styles is still with the company. You're not going to get AJ Styles during that Monday through Friday, probably. But you'll have AJ come out for, say, the Saturday show, if that's the night that they tape.
I like it. Universal, Holland, make this move. You're already bringing this stupid product
back. And then
back.
That way you could also have you'd also have like your own developmental, because you could put the guys that need work, that need to work on promos and in ring. You could have those guys like Garrett Bischoff. I'd have Garrett Bischoff work every show. So that way by the end of a month or so, you know, he's worked 5 days a week and you know he's gotten better, he's improved.
I like the collaboration here. We're trying to save TNA. Very, very brilliant. See, I felt bad about TNA and bad for you, Brother Nate, for this, but there might be hope after all.
Keep hope alive.
This is the portion. This is the portion of the show that Nate tries to cut me off after I try to mercifully end this segment, but it's not happening today. Is it, Nate? No.
No.
But wait until you see what did get cut off.
I just want to make sure you personally recommend an audiobook to the listeners before we leave.
I recommend The Hobbit. I mean, I could recommend Bad Luck and Trouble, a Jack Reacher novel.
I think much like TNA, we're going to pull the plug on this segment. So anybody at Universal, holler at us. Marcus will work out the details. And good job, Alfred. Good job.
Thank you, Nathan. Segment 4 is on the way.
Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the MASH.
It's now the Monster MASH.
The Monster MASH.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the MASH.
It's caught on and flash.
It's now the MASH.
It's now the Monster MASH. Now everything's cool. Drax's a part of the band. And my Monster MASH is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this MASH was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them what is said.
Yeah!
Then you can Monster MASH.
The Monster MASH.
And do my graveyard smash.
Then you can MASH.
You'll catch on and all fly.
Then you can MASH.
Then you can Monster MASH.
And now it's time to return to the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time.
It's the Kings of Sport. TheKingsOfSport.com.
Holly came from Miami, FLA.
And we are back on the Kings of Sports, the show that always takes a walk on the wild side, ready to close off this special Halloween edition of the Kings of Sports with segment four. You know, we got that scary good ratchetness for you. Of course, I'm the Godfather Nate Milton, joined by Marcus Vandenberg and our boy Ron Burgundy Africano out there.
I'm Ron Burgundy?
But, you know, it's all fun. It's all love on this show. But let me tell you where there is no love, and that is when it comes to Dana White and his feelings about Tito Ortiz and Rampage Jackson. And Brother Marcus, we know the big fight that Bellator was promoting has been canceled. I think the pay-per-view is canceled, but they're still going to air the card as a regular show on Spike TV. But Dana White had some interesting things to say about it. On Twitter, he came out on October the 25th, and he was like, as soon as the news broke, he's like, oh boy, karma is a bitch. And then he put a smiley face after that. So what you think about your boy Dana White and his reaction to Tito Ortiz's misfortune, Marcus?
The TNA of the MMA world suffered a big loss. Since they've been hyping this up, well, not really hyping it up, but you couldn't really hear about this pay-per-view unless you really followed the sport of MMA. But they're having their first show scheduled for November 2nd, and it was all based on Rampage versus Tito, and this is why we had this bleed over to TNA in terms of having both wrestlers on. And, of course, we found out this past weekend that Tito Ortiz pulled out. I find it hilarious. You know, Dana is notorious for having beefs with certain individuals that were involved in his company. And, you know, I can respect, you know, the whole holding grudges thing is one thing, but I can respect a guy going out and taking a passive-aggressive shot at Tito Ortiz. That's fine by me.
This is very common with Dana White. We see it all the time. We saw it when Fedor Emelianenko wouldn't sign with the UFC after they courted him for a very long time. Dana White still holds a grudge against Tito or Fedor's team for not signing with him. And when he finally lost to Fabricio Werdum, he tweeted out a smiley face. Dana White has this Vince McMahon quality where he doesn't forget anything and he holds on to these petty grudges. But again, we see that in so many competitive and great people who are at the top of their game. Now, I'm not saying great personality-wise. I'm not at liberty to talk about that. But whenever you see somebody at the top of their game, very competitive, very petty, and that applies to Dana White.
I don't know about you have to have that pettiness to be at the top of your game. I mean,
No, you don't, but you see it a lot.
We see it with, you know, people like Jordan. We mentioned Michael Jordan at the top of the show. Vince McMahon, like you mentioned. This is actually funny to me. You know, there's been some things that Dana White has said in terms of holding grudges that I have disagreed with, in particular his thoughts about John Jones in the past. But this is something that just makes me laugh because it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, and that's one Tito Ortiz. And so, you know, I have no, you know, if I feel bad for anybody, I feel bad for Rampage because I think he was going to, you know, tear through Tito. And even though it's a B-level or even a C-level show, you know, it's always good to get a win. So I feel bad for Rampage in that aspect. But, you know, I don't think that the fans of Bellator, as much as there can be, you know, rabid fans of Bellator, I don't think they're missing much from this card. I think if you're a Bellator fan, you don't want to see cards headlined by guys like Rampage or guys like Tito. You want to see, you know, Chandler get his shine. I mean, even King Mo, I think, might be pushing it a little bit. But you want to see those younger dudes, those kind of quote-unquote homegrown dudes, get the spotlight. So I have no problem with what Dana White said. And I also think that this isn't going to hurt Bellator, you know, that much, if at all, Marcus.
It's a blessing in disguise because no one in their right mind was paying $45 to watch a card headline by Rampage Jackson and Tito Ortiz. But the flip side is this is good because people will get to see for free Michael Chandler versus Eddie Alvarez on Saturday night on Spike. So people who are maybe new to Bellator can see the two best fighters in their organization for free and then go from there in terms of trying to build fans along the way.
It's a great fight. My fear is that it won't obviously it's not going to get the mainstream or exposure to the casual fan, because fighting fans know that Eddie Alvarez is one of the best fighters and this is going to be a great fight. But are they good? Are the casual fans, who are very important to this brand if it wants to grow, are they going to want to tune in to see these fighters?
The casual sports fan or casual MMA fan?
Both, a little bit of both. I would say even the casual MMA fan, they have a better chance with, because really MMA is a niche in and of itself still. It's growing with UFC, it's becoming national with Fox. It's still a bit of a niche where people kind of either thumb their nose at it or they look at it as a brutal, violent sport. So, yeah, I would say the casual MMA fan.
Yeah, I think the casual MMA fan might tune in. I mean, there's no UFC they're doing against this weekend. So, you know, if you're looking for your fight itch and need something to watch on Saturday night, that's not a bad option to tune into, at least for the main event.
Yeah, I think, you know, if even if you're a casual MMA fan, that, you know about Michael Chandler. You know, I don't think that they're going to get any casual sports fans. I mean, you know, they have the same, I wouldn't say the same audience, but it's a similar audience for TNA. Whereas, you know, you're not going to get any casual wrestling fans to really watch that, or casual sports fans. You're going to have the hardcores on hardcores watching Impact. And I think, you know, you're hardcore to semi-casual, whatever level is between casual and hardcore, regular. Like, if you're a hardcore or regular viewer of MMA, you'll probably check out the fight. But, you know, casual fans, you know, who has casual fans these days other than the NFL and the NBA and, to a lesser extent, Major League Baseball? Every other sport could theoretically, I mean, you could throw college football in there too, but every other sport theoretically is a niche sport.
I think there's always going to be cash. You can't really, I think you have a point, but I think that that's the exception. Because you really can't survive unless you have that casual viewing. That's what's going to make the big differences with the rating or a pay-per-view buy rate, is that, okay, now you're bringing in people who just have that passing interest that you've capitalized on.
In terms of numbers, do you think it'll crack a million viewers?
I don't think so, because I think most of, even with the TNA lead-in that they had a while back when they first debuted, I think that first show they got a million, and then after that it steadily declined. So I don't see this show cracking a million. I think even with Rampage and Tito, I wouldn't see that show cracking a million. So I think they'll get a decent number for Bellator, maybe a higher than average number for Bellator, but it won't be a great number, and I don't even think it'll be close to a regular TNA number.
I think they'd be doing backflips if they got like 650,000.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see anywhere from 450 to 700. I think that's your range, and that's your ceiling for the show. And if they get to towards the higher end of that's a win for Spike. So we'll go from a scary display of pettiness from Dana White to Brother Alfred. We have a new member, or I should say, you know, me, because I used to be part of the Bald Brotherhood. Sometimes I go back every now and then. But we've got a new member in the Bald Brotherhood, and he might be the world's strongest bald man.
Yes, WWE.com came out with what they call exclusive photos of Mark Henry's new haircut. As you know, Mark Henry has cultivated a very famous look with a long, big, bushy beard and those long dreadlocks and braided hair. But he's completely shaved off his dreadlocks. He's bald with a big
those
beard.
Those aren't dreadlocks, man. Come on.
Let
me take your black card away.
Braids, dreadlocks, they're all
there's
his hair is
there's
long
a difference,
and braided, and it's not nappy. Okay, he washed his hair. It's braided hair that he washed, so there's no flies around him, so they're not dreadlocks. He didn't smoke weed. He's not Rastafarian. He's not a hippie with a tie-dye t-shirt on. Okay, so they're not dreadlocks. We made that point. Does it matter that much? No, what matters is that Henry looks like Rick Ross, and the Rick Ross comparisons will be inevitable. Take a look at this picture. It's striking, and I see this a lot. My barber, he's got that same exact look. I see guys all around. When I was in Vegas a couple weeks ago, guys were doing that. I wonder if it's possible for Rick Ross to put an intellectual property on the bald head and bearded look, because
in
it's
fact,
ridiculous.
Don't forget fat.
And fat. You got to be fat. You got to be at least. You know,
I don't know, because if Rick Ross gets the profit off of it, I think he might have to fight Kimbo Slice for some of the profits too. Because Kimbo was one of the pioneers in that look as well.
Well, it's only karma because Rick Ross did steal his gimmick from somebody else, so now he's it's all coming back around.
So well, cool he still has the beard, by the way. So he looks like he's got the freeway beard going, but like the Rick Ross baldness going. So it's I'm glad he got the hair. The hair was receding on him. And R-Truth, let this be a wake up call to you. Your nets with the whole braids that are just sliding off your head. Touch your hair, boy. Your braids are your braids are running from you. So you should take the book out of. Out of R-Truth did a book out of Mark Henry's playbook here and touch your hair. So I like it.
Yeah, it's a good look. I think like Marcus was saying, man, them braids was just hanging on by a thread. Like it, like them braids was just like you just see him holding on to the top of his forehead and that hairline was going back like LeBron. But I think it's a good look. I think that the fact that they made a point to put it on the website. Maybe that means that, I don't know what his health status is, but I mean, maybe that means it's a return because he was literally one of the best things in wrestling when we last saw him. And I think him not being around the last month or so or last couple months, I think that's hurt the product in terms of the WWE programming. So anytime Mark Henry can be around, even if it's just as a speaking part, I think he adds to the show.
Yeah, and it's a fresh look for Mark Henry, and it's something that they've been toiling around with babyface and heel Mark Henry, and it's really a shame because he should be a heel. He should be that big, black, scary man that's really going to scare the predominantly white audience. Really, no, honestly, it's funny, but you've got to really – the best heels and best babyfaces are predicated on something that really you would be – it's believable. And when you see Mark Henry, he just looks like one of those big guys that you just don't mess with, and that's why he should just be a heel.
I mean, he's either got to be a heel or a badass babyface, and they never seem to want to make him a badass babyface. They always want him to be smiling and wearing the bright red colors.
Kool-Aid
and
like, man.
Yeah, that's not, you know, that's he's either got to be a dastardly heel or just a dude that everybody's scared of, you know, the good guy that's going to whip everybody's ass.
And he's menacing in these pictures. He's not smiling in any of them, not that I've seen. So hopefully that's indication that we are going to get the big, scary Mark Henry back.
Yeah, it's 3 months from now he'll be dancing with El Torito.
Oh no, don't say that.
No.
I think it's gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen. He didn't resign the contract to dance with a 4'2" guy in a costume. No, it's not happening.
Oh, stranger things have happened in the WWE. But something that is not strange is the return of one of our most popular segments on the show, and that's the list. We went on our Facebook group today, facebook.com/KingsOfSport, as well as Twitter, KOS_POD, and we put out two Halloween themed topics for you guys today. And the first one was, what athlete would make the best horror movie villain? And then the second one was, if Marcus and Alfred and myself was going to a costume party, what trio, what famous group of three would our costume be? And so we got some great feedback, but before we get to it, we're going to give you our answers, and we'll start off with none other than Brother Alfred. What's your list, man? Let's start with the villains.
Well, the horror villains, I couldn't think of anybody better than Kendrick Perkins, because every time you see this guy, he has just got this permanent scowl on his face. He looks like Sam the Eagle from The Muppets. But he's this big medicine guy who I really think if you pissed him off too bad, he's going to go after you. And he's one of the few remaining NBA players where I look at him and I feel intimidated because I just think he's going to come through the screen and attack me, maybe cut up my couch and strangle me or something like that. And I just think in the right movie, Kendrick Perkins popping out of a door or a closet or somewhere that just scares a bunch of teenage kids in 3D would be scary. There's nothing scarier than Kendrick Perkins when it comes to sports. As far as our gimmick with the three kings...
We're going to get to that. We're going to take it in stages, brother. We can't give away all the goodness in one moment.
I like it.
So you got Kendrick Perkins as your movie villain. I think that's a great choice. I have a... I got an honorable mention before I give mine. My honorable mention is Ron Artest, AKA Meta World Peace, because he's not necessarily scary, but we know he can. He has that craziness in him, and I think he'd be kind of like a Kevin Spacey movie villain, where it's all psychological, and you know something's just not right. Even though he on the outside he has a pleasant demeanor, I think he also reminds me of you remember Robert De Niro in Cape Fear?
Yeah.
Like just imagine being trapped in a house or on a boat, and Ron Artest is chasing you. And Meta World Peace is just chasing you and just saying things that don't make sense, but in some way it's still scary and threatening. Like you're running around the boat and Meta World Peace is behind you, and he's like, "Sometimes rainbows look like God frowning." Like, I can see Meta saying it. Like, go look at Meta World Peace's Twitter and read it in a scary movie villain voice. Yeah, that's scary. But I'm gonna give the movie villain award to Ray Lewis, because for so many years on the field and off the field, Ray Lewis was like legitimately one of the scariest dudes on the planet. I'm not even going to talk about what he was alleged to have done or not have done, because I don't need those problems in my life. But let's just say if I was in a dark alley and the footsteps was behind me and I turned around, if I saw Ray Lewis, I'd just be like, hey, I had a good life. I had a good life. Because nothing good is going to come from that situation. So I got a honorable mention, Meta World Peace, but my true movie villain is Ray Lewis. So, well, what you think about that, Brother Alfred?
I thought that was... I like how you included the double entry as a nod to Ray Lewis's alleged double murder.
Mm.
Alleged.
See, I wasn't even going to say nothing about that right there.
I said alleged.
You know what? I was going to go a different route here. But after hearing your answer, Nate, I'm going to change it up. I was going the easy route here, and I was going to go Sam Cassell, just because he's Sam Cassell.
Because he looks like an alien?
You said it, not me. But after hearing your answer about Ray Lewis, I'm going a different route. I'm going Harvin Marison. Silent assassin. Harvin Marison. A.K.A. Marvin Harrison, maybe? I don't know. That's what they say. Possibly. Never heard of him. But you know, it's a guy that you wouldn't suspect he would be just the average looking, you know, black guy, unassuming. But you know, when it came time to get down to business, he could, you know, take you out. He made some moves. No one knows about it. No one suspects him. He would get away with all the crimes because it's he's Harvin Marison. He couldn't do such a thing. He's just a quiet wide receiver, caught passes from Peyton Manning, allegedly. So I'm doing Harvin Marison.
Okay. That's solid. What do you think about that, Alfred?
I like that. I like the reasoning. That does make him scarier that he's so quiet and unassuming, but he's capable, allegedly, of these dastard things. And we did see a Harvin Marison sighting, I believe it was last week. Yeah, Sunday Night Football, the Colts and the Broncos.
By the way. I had a feeling he would show up, but I'm glad nobody came up missing.
Shame on us. Shame on us for picking three black people, by the way. That's not good.
What is this? Neighborhood Watch?
We couldn't throw one white person in there just to balance it out.
So, what, Psycho T?
Birdman, someone.
Yeah, Birdman.
I'll tell you who is a scary white man, though. Bill Romanowski. Something ain't right up here.
Yeah.
So I give Bill Romanowski another honorable mention just to let the white people know they ain't off the hook. So those are our answers. Let's go to the listener feedback. Again, you can leave feedback on Twitter, KOS_POD, and also on Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. We got some Facebook feedback, Brother Alfred.
Absolutely. We'll start with Athletes as Villains, of course, with Steve Castan. Best athlete to make a great villain is hands down Dikembe Mutombo. Tall, dark as hell, ugly as dick dog, Steve. And that voice. Steve Castan, shame on you. And then, of course, Jerome Jackson. He says he thinks Michael Vick would make a good horror villain. Imagine him running the kennel from hell, wearing a mask made from skinned dogs. As a fellow Virginian, it hurt me to say that. Well, then why did you say it, Jerome Jackson?
I think we've learned a little bit about ourselves today.
We didn't at least say dark as hell, though. I mean, dang.
Yeah, He's a scary, dark, black midnight edge of darkness.
That might be cool in Canada, but down here in the States, that's yeah, it. That's
Steve,
a...
Steve, you're on probation now.
It's not a good look for you, Steve.
No.
You're now an acquaintance of the show. Not a friend.
No longer a friend of the show. He's on a 30-day probation. All right. And our second topic, of course, was, if we went to a costume party, what famous trio would we dress up as? And I also want to hear who would be who, because that to me is more interesting, even more so than costumes. So let's go in reverse order. Brother Marcus, what we going as to the costume party?
So this one was tough, and I was thinking, and I didn't want to do the cliche of wrestling, NWO, blah, 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 blah. So I'm going to my favorite TV show of all time, Saved by the Bell. The trio of Zach Morris, AC Slater, Screech Powers. I think that would be Zach Morris, only because he's sort of the balanced character. The two of you doofballs are a bit of extremes, as we can find out when I'm not on the show, the topics of conversation that come up. Here's the problem, though. I think Alfred has the AC Slater body, but he would be totally Screech. So, Nate, AC Slater,
yes.
Alfred, Screech Powers.
I reject that distinction. Did the guy have a catchphrase? Did Screech have a catchphrase?
He did not. Here's the other issue, too. Neither one of you like black girls. So Screech loved Lisa. So what do we do about that?
That is an overrated distinction. As much as I do love black women, I sample the entire platter. It just happens there's more white women. If there's more white women around, I'll be with white women and black women. But I think Screech would be the same way because he was in a porn for a while. So maybe I should be Screech.
There you go. There you go. So
he's also kind of a, like, if you've seen any of his stuff with the wrestling world, he's kind of a mark for himself.
A little bit.
Yeah, so this comparison is adding up.
There you go. See, and plus Mario Lopez, TV background, Nate, broadcast background.
Yeah, I like it.
Done deal.
Good call.
Very thoughtful.
Yes, it was. For me, I am going to go to the cliche world of professional wrestling. And I am not going to pick the NWO, though. I am saying that we're going to the costume party as the Fabulous Freebirds. And
who's the racist, allegedly?
Yeah, here we go. Alfred is going to show up as Bam Bam Terry Gordy because, like we mentioned, he got the physique. And I think he's probably the biggest drinker out of all of us. So,
out of you? Come on.
Oh, I think Alfred.
Yeah, come on, Nate.
No.
I mean, I can drink, but I think Alfred has the youth on his side.
Good point.
You know, Alfred can last. He can last a little bit longer. Alfred is the young strong bull, so he's Terry Bam Bam Gordy. Marcus is very eloquent and good with the words, so he's going to be Buddy Roberts. And since I am a little bit more flamboyant and I have no problem saying the N-word, I'm going to be Michael PSA. All the niggas out there.
He's more of a nigga than we are.
we're going to be the Fabulous Freebirds at the costume party. Are you good with being Terry Gordy, Big Nasty?
I'll borrow it. I'll try it on for a little bit. If I like it, if it fits me enough, I'll do it.
All right, now who do you have, Alfred?
Well, unlike you guys, I didn't really figure who would be what, but I'm still going to work this in. And as much as I may struggle with the difference between dreadlocks and braids, I still am a huge hip-hop guy. Love hip-hop groups from De La Soul to Naughty by Nature to the Fugees. But the three, not threesome, the tripod that we would be, if we were to be three peas in a pod, has to be Run DMC, my favorite hip-hop group of all time, not named the Wu-Tang Clan. And, you know, you guys could fight over Daryl, DMC McDaniels, and Jason, Jam Master Jay, rest in peace. But I would be Joseph Run Simmons, because when it comes to the Kings of Sport podcast, whose house? Alfred McNasty's house.
You would not be Rev Run. Actually, let me say, you would not be 2013 Rev Run, I should say that.
I'm the Reverend of the Kings of Sports podcast. There's a God.
All right, continue.
Yeah, I'm staying away from that. I'm letting the lightning strike first before I continue.
Oh, no lightning yet. Soon enough.
Soon, yeah. It'll happen. Good luck getting back from Africa.
Just keep your fingers crossed. If you don't hear from me after the 3-week period, send some warlords out or something.
That's
pills.
So yeah, those are our answers. Let's go. First, we got some Twitter feedback.
Wait, he better fill out the group. Who are we?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I told you guys to fight over it. I said that I didn't configure who would be what. You guys could fight over what not. Okay, you know what? I'll give no. I just don't know. The late great Jam Master Jay. Are either of you fitting of being the late great Jam Master Jay? I wouldn't want to.
Considering we're alive, no, we're not fitting.
Well, Nate's fantasy team is dead, so he'll be Jam Master Jay.
Actually, and I'm still alive in this division.
Oh, you're
I'm
dead.
Still alive. Do you know, Alfred? I want you to know something with all this fantasy gloating that is still going to be the most ironic and enjoyable thing in the world. Even when you finish with a better record than Marcus or myself, if we win the division, we still get a first round bye.
That's okay.
Over your juggernaut.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. As long as you're admitting that there's a juggernaut in place, that's all I wanted to teach you. So you learned a lesson. Thank you.
While we're still here, who's played who? I played Marcus and I won.
I played you and I won, and other than that, I don't know what else has happened.
You ever done playing each other?
No. I don't recall that.
Played Marcus, Albert?
Have I played Marcus? I don't think I've ever played Marcus in a season. I think that's coming up in a couple weeks or something.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's week 12.
Are you sure?
I said I'm pretty sure. I'm not 100% sure.
I mean, there's such a thing as the internet where you can just type stuff in and check.
I mean, you're welcome to do that, but I mean, we have listeners who would like to hear our show and not our fantasy football toiling.
So that is true. Good point.
I think the listeners would be very interested.
I'm not 100% sure. I can't be sure of these things. I just pay attention to my team and I build my juggernaut. Everybody else can sort themselves out.
I mean, I don't know how reputable this site is, Marcus, Yahoo Fantasy. I don't know.
Don't slander my company when we have a company in place. I'm
asking you, is this a reputable show? Is this a reputable website?
Yes, it is.
Because what I'm seeing is that Marcus is going to defeat Alfred this week, and Alfred's going to drop to 6-2. It's a bad week.
Jack Pisco says that last numbers of aces and eights, Ray, Nux, and Bischoff would make a good tripod for the Kings of Sport. I kind of agree. The South Beach, NWO, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and that other guy. Wow. Shade on Dwayne Wade by Jack Pisco. And then he also adds to himself saying, or those kids from Three Ninjas movies. I saw Three Ninjas movies. Loved them. And then as far as our additional feedback.
I got feedback here on Twitter. We've got feedback from Jonathan Blake, who says, sorry, guys, but the first trio to come to mind is the Three Stooges. he doesn't say who would be who, but I'm thinking.
They're all pretty even.
Yeah. Except for Shemp. Shemp is like somehow worse than the other three.
No, what about Joe? Wasn't that, what was it? It was Joe. The last Stooge. Yeah, see, Curly, Larry, Moe, Shemp, and then there was, that guy Joe. He was a heavy set guy, and he always used to say, be nice, and he wasn't there for very long.
I remember Joe.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big Three Stooges fan. It was just something that was on before WCW Saturday Night came on. So we've also got feedback from friend of the show, and he is a friend of the show, unlike some people. TJ McClune, who says the Freebirds, Public Enemy with Alfred as Flav. or the Dungeon of Doom.
Oh boy,
Dungeon of Doom
with some great workers such as Kamala and the Shark. And Brutus Beefcake, who was he the Zodiac at the time?
I think he was the Zodiac.
There's a lot of winners in that group.
Well, acquaintance of the show, Steve Kassan, chimed in with costume trio for the Kings. It would be something see you guys at P.E. Okay, Public Enemy, Chuck Flav, and Terminator X. Sorry, Professor Griff. Jerome Jackson says, as far as the trio, how about Luke, Han Solo, and Obi-Wan? Jack Pisco added, okay, he already said that. Okay, thank you.
I like how he just bailed on the feedback at the end.
Oh, he was pasting here, but these are already on the Facebook wall, the rest of them.
Okay, that makes sense.
See, I caught myself in reading what I wasn't supposed to be reading. I'm getting better.
Yeah, that's a great way to end the show. Progress is always a positive. So that's it for the special Halloween themed edition of the Kings of Sport. You can leave feedback each and every week. Tell us what you liked about today's show, what you didn't like. Leave feedback at Twitter, KOS_POD. Facebook page is facebook.com/the Kings of Sport. And before we get out of here, we will let you know how you can find us, how you can follow us, how you can keep up with our Halloween exploits this week. Marcus Vandenberg, how can the people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Marco Will, MarcoWill. And if it goes to a game 7, my Halloween will be spent at the office. So go Boston in 6.
Big Nasty.
Follow Alfred Big Nasty Cunawa at This Is Nasty on Twitter, and go to the beloved Bleacher Report website to check out my articles and videos and its beloved host of WWWTF, among other properties.
The Sharpie?
Oh, it's sitting here. It's again, it's not the same Sharpie every single week. So it's not the Sharpie, it's a Sharpie.
So it's like El Torito, it's not the same guy every time? Yeah.
Is it not?
No, that was the biggest thing from the pay-per-view last night was the most entertaining part of that match was JBL talking about the black. He's a black bull. Now he's a brown bull. I didn't know bulls could shed their skin, Cole.
Right.
Like, JBL, whatever they're paying JBL, it's worth it. You can follow me on Twitter in the number 8, MOZAIK. I will probably be at home on Halloween with the lights out because I do not plan on giving kids any candy. I don't want to raise a generation of people looking for handouts. If, you know what I'm saying? Like, I might be part of the TNA. Tea Party. I might be a Tea Party member in training because I don't believe in these handouts and these subsidies. If you want candy, you got to earn the candy. Cut a yard, take out the trash, do a dance or something, and then maybe I'll give you some candy. But no, you just can't ring my doorbell when I'm, you know, trying to enjoy TNA on Thursday night. You can't do that. Interrupt my AJ Styles time. I'm being in Dixieland. So that's what we're going to be up to. Whatever you guys are going to be up to, be safe. If you're out there taking the kids out, check your candy because people is crazy. Make sure you got reflective gear on their costumes so y'all don't get run over. What else, Marcus? I mean, this got to be like safety issues out there when it comes to Halloween.
Yeah, it's really just, you know, make sure you're knocking on the right doors. What else happens on Halloween?
Yeah, I know they like the trick or treating is earlier now than it was when we were kids.
I thought it was later because the whole time change doesn't kick in until.
After I'm talking about like now. In general, like they kick like they're trick or treating like starting at 6 in the evening or 5 in the evening. Oh. What we used to go was like 9 o'clock at night.
That's way too late. That'll get you caught up. Don't listen to Nate Dorr early.
Yeah, you don't want to end up running into Otis Nixon because that's when the freaks come out at night.
Did we cover don't drink and drive?
Yeah, don't drink and drive. Yeah, for the adults out there, don't drink and drive. Have fun, but be smart, be safe. Wrap it up.
Wrap up your bratwursts. Use foil if needed.
Just be safe, be smart, and have fun. So that's going to be it. Everybody enjoy Halloween. We will be back on Thursday with a bonus podcast, if you will. It's going to be the entire Alfredo Torres interview that we did that was on a couple shows back. But we had almost an hour with Alfredo Torres, so we're going to bring that back for Halloween and have some fun with that. And then we'll be back next week with a full episode, and it'll be fun. It'll be a good time. So, again, shout-out to Mark Spears for stopping by talking NBA. Shout-out to everybody at Place to Be Nation, Audible.com. And that's it. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. Good night out there, whatever you are, because you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, facts, facts.